Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast. This is the internet's only college football podcast, and if that weren't already true, it would become true tonight, because joining us to interrupt the usual important discussion of Pittsburgh football and other titans of the industry, we're going to talk to Bomani Jones. Hey, Bo.
What's going on? I did see it's Pittsburgh and North Carolina, and I learned today that Pittsburgh has a good defense, because I hadn't thought a damn thing about Pittsburgh football at all.
Should we update him on the glorious progress of Pat Narduzzi towards football perfection?
Yeah, when we walked into here to do the show, they had just called back a Pittsburgh touchdown, but called DPI on the pass that was supposed to be a touchdown. So both coaches were screaming at the ref at the same time. Mm-hmm. So that was fun.
And on two occasions this year.
Oh, already, also they fought before opening kickoff, because, you know, that's what you expect of those Mac Brown teams. They're chippy.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay.
Yeah. And on two occasions this year.
He's still got some of the last guy's players.
Pat Narduzzi has on two occasions this year on fourth and short kicked a field goal at the one. Yeah.
In games one, in which he needed seven, to be specific.
Yeah. With under 2 minutes on the clock, I believe. Under 3-1, I know for sure.
But it's okay, because he went into his press conference after both games and made it worse.
By explaining his rationale.
I tell you this, though. If you put me a list of the 130 college football coaches, just put them on a piece of paper and I don't know anything about them, and you ask me to pick out which one of them is the head coach at Pittsburgh, I think I'm pulling Narduzzi off that list.
What? You're like, step one, goatee.
Have any of y'all ever met him? He has eyes like a Ninja Turtle villain.
Oh.
Like, I want to play football for Pitt. He's got that touch.
Yeah. Also, he looks like a man who hasn't seen the sun in, like,
no, that's why I say he's a Ninja Turtle vision, because he's been creeping through the sewers.
He's been in the sewers, yeah. We have a little bit of official business, a bit of podcast business, if you will, to cover, which is that in coordination with At the Right Time, Banner Society has been helping y'all out on a couple things. I was on there to talk about illicit recruiting. Is that probably what we talked about?
Yeah, we basically just rattled off a roll call off the top of our heads of our favorite college football scandals involving boosterish behavior.
Yeah, that's really all we're going to do tonight after this, by the way. We're just going to, like, shout out everything else that we've done.
Because this is the week that we discovered that the biggest one-day download in Shutdown Fullcast history was not any of our championship specials, not recording from the Rose Bowl, not even the time Lane Kiffin got fired at the airport. Nope. Hugh Freeze in the hospital bed.
Yeah.
In fact, the biggest one before this was when Hugh Freeze was fired over some FOIA
the first
documents.
Time. So now he's done this twice.
Yeah.
Hugh Freeze is our most reliable content wellspring.
Hugh Freeze, continue to do crimes that this show may go on forever.
I feel like Hugh Freeze getting busted for those numbers coming up on his phone bill is really underrated in the grand scheme of college football.
That did not stay with us long
enough. It's a shame that story was wasted on such a it's such a rapid news cycle, and it really cost us what it should have been for not just any guy, but that guy to get caught like that and then go get the job at Liberty. How do we not talk about this more?
I think they've actually taken a pretty good approach for the current news cycle, which is this. Just keep doing crimes.
Yeah.
If you just keep doing them,
they'll stop talking about the old crimes because they have to cover the new crimes.
Yeah.
We lost Bo.
Yeah. It works. Right. Oh, hold on.
I'm here. He's back. Folks, you'll be happy to know our audio is contagious and it spreads to any guest.
It's that New York internet. It ain't as good as that Oxford, Mississippi internet that Hugh Freeze used to.
I was trying to Bluetooth headphone it, and it felt like it was creating a delay. And so I thought I may have been affecting the quality of the podcast. So I decided to go.
No such thing. No such thing.
It said quality.
We keep it straight punk here. So lo-fi. Yeah, you're right in line.
Delay, nobody likes the delay.
And like all my favorite punks, it's not because we're that anti-establishment. It's just because we're poor.
You also had Marcus Spears on. We're gonna close out the 4-part series with Joel Anderson, friend of both programs. If you want to understand, like, I think from every single perspective, the various skullduggeries that happen in college football, recruiting wise and in terms of power players, it's a really good intro. I mean, I'm, of course, you know, shining my own badge here, but like, we did a great job.
Yeah, let's do one that doesn't shine a badge. If you like this mini series from the right time, they did one, but was it over the summer on the Max Contract era? That was also really cool and really informative. You can scroll back through the archives and check that one out.
I am glad that you enjoyed that, because I really worried that that was just a little bit too nerdy. Gabe pushed on that and got through it. People really dug it.
Even for having marinated in Grantland for 2.5 years, it was something that I didn't feel like I had a really great grounding on, like historically and context-wise. Yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah, I do imagine that Grantland is a place full of people that really, really, really get off on things like mass contracts and mid-level exceptions.
I didn't watch basketball until I got there. Like, I had never, because I didn't grow up around basketball unless it was Pat Summitt basketball. And you kind of can't be there and not watch basketball, because it creates a language barrier if you don't watch basketball between you and your coworkers.
Well, welcome to the party. It is a weird world. It's not this world's kind of weird, but weird nonetheless.
Thank you. I'm a Grizzlies fan. It's going to be great.
Oh, yeah. You picked the right one. You're doing this correctly.
go Grizz! I think one of the best moments that I've ever heard was during the run of Grit and Grind at the peak, when John Hollinger was asked about playing the Spurs. And one night they beat the Spurs, and I think it was a DM that accidentally went out as a tweet where Hollinger said somebody congratulated him, and instead of replying in the DM, he did in the timeline and said, "Thanks. It sometimes feels like we're drawing mustaches on the Mona Lisa, but we're doing our best."
Good enough for me.
Go check out that. Go check out the series that Banner Society just did with The Right Time. They are both informative and fantastic. Tonight, the notes that I have here, by the way, are just this.
Yeah,
we have
notes.
It says, Bomani Scandal Show, and then it says, the hits and only the hits. That's it. I just have, like, a starter list of, like, favorite extremely sketchy dudes here.
If we're starting with hits, we got to start with our favorite hit of all, which is Bobby Petrino hit the pavement, and then being asked to hit the pavement. I have not been saving that.
I love that guy. And I love that guy just because who lies that fast? Who goes straight to the lie?
And he's a very, it was a good lie too, because it was uninteresting.
Yes. And it almost worked.
Yeah. So it almost worked. The rumor had been for a long time and unconfirmed that there was no motorcycle accident. Or if the motorcycle accident happened, then the motorcycle accident was not the reason for the neck brace. That in fact, there is this longstanding rumor that the dude who was Bobby Petrino's mistress's fiance tuned him up, which I sort of think that might be wish fulfillment for Falcons fans or anyone else who's been on the wrong end of Bobby Petrino-ing.
Your face, like, his face looks like it rode dirt, though. Like, his face looks like it got dragged along the ground.
That was my argument.
Yeah.
Those weren't punched in the face wounds. Mm-mm.
Those were abrasions.
They looked like he fell off a motorcycle.
Yeah, the neck brace was probably the thing where I went, I don't know, that may be cosmetic. But yeah, I really want to believe that somebody got beat up.
The main cosmetics was putting the bowl gear on top of all this. Was it the cotton bowl hat? Okay, yeah, y'all remember that,
sitting,
right?
Like sitting on top of his
bowl.
Head?
Sugar bowl, sugar. Yeah. Right.
Like that was the most cynical part of all, is that he showed up reminding you what
Baby,
I had
remember
done
the good
for you
times.
That no one has...
Did he, like... At any point, by the way, did anyone point that out in the moment? Because I had totally forgotten that he was wearing the
sugar
bowl
gear.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's Bobby Petrino. Like, we did not give him a moment of leeway on this because it's Bobby.
Like, it feels easy to forget that this, because this was like 8 scandals ago, but it was also like 8 scandals in, you know? Like,
yes.
He was a known
yes.
dirtbag at the time, only more so in hindsight. Bo,
with no charm. With no charm and no personality.
It's like talking to a box fan trying to talk to Bobby Petrino.
An underhanded box fan.
Yes, sorry.
Bo, yeah, I always love when you talk about Bobby Petrino because, like, though you have wisely sworn off the Atlanta Falcons, you still maintain the edge for those who have wronged them, such as the New Orleans Saints franchise and the coach in question here.
Yes. I had a little sympathy for him with the foul situation, though. He thought he was coming to coach Michael Vick, and he got Joey Harrington. It was a real bum deal that he got. And what did he do? He got there, and he lied to the players and said that we're all in this thing together. And he was trying to get the fuck out. The only difference between him and every other player on the roster is that he had the option of getting the fuck out. He bailed. I would have bailed, too.
Also, I always thought, like, the juxtaposition between the bail and the recovery is astonishing because it's like, well, what was the escape pod? Where did it land?
On the side of the road.
It landed.
And do you remember the press conference when he had to call the Hogs and the look on his face like, oh my God, I'm back to this shit?
The only coach who is compared in terms of stranger in a strange land, I have landed on the wrong island, right, kind of look, was Jimbo Fisher the first couple of weeks.
Oh, God.
Because A&M was very much like, here's Jimbo learning all of our traditions and all of our culture. And every shot of him
and
was
Jimbo's
terror.
Like, howdy.
Howdy.
How much I get paid for touching this cow?
But, you know, he melted in eventually because he's like, I am rich. You are rich, yes? And I have to imagine that's every conversation.
Well, his problem was Texas had the McAvick situation where McAvick just never understood that his particular archetype was never going to work there. And so they eventually at Texas got him wearing boots and shit like that. But he just didn't fit. Like, Jimbo's not far away. West Virginia and College Station are really kind of like neighbors when you stop and think about it. But he got there and realized, oh, there's like weird quirkiness to this whole thing. Ooh, man, that's a lot to figure out in 2 weeks, man.
I mean, that's a church with a dog on the altar.
Yeah. Yeah. He had, although I do think the argument that they were closer than people thought, Jimbo could go to a gas station and buy a deer stand. Yeah, Texas is fine with him. Like,
you know what else I think? See, you were saying West Virginia and College Station aren't that far apart. You know what else that puts me to mind of? Nick Saban being a really great fit at Michigan State. When he first got there, and he's like, ah, this is another TARP-based economy. Yeah. I can work with this.
Oh, these people have actually had fights with bricks. Okay, yeah. Cool. I can do Michigan State.
He did that Kent State run for college, right? So, like, yeah. He got his rust belt in. He knew what he was doing.
Yeah, he and Gary Pinkel in the same, like, they were roommates at Kent State, which I can't think of, like, a quieter room, right? Yeah. Like,
just them both, like, sitting perfectly, like, Lucy and Desi on their little beds, just, like, with books in front of them. Just,
oh, good night, Gary. Good night. And they wake up 3 hours later.
All right. Oh, I am refreshed.
I'm refreshed. I'm good. Yeah, this is normal. Humans act like this. I wanted to ask, you said McAvick would never, you know, that archetype would never work at Texas. Is that what Tom Herman's deal is right now? Like, is he just kind of too much of a like aggro dick type dude to be successful there?
Well, to be fair, his archetype doesn't really seem to work anywhere as far as relating to people. He just happened to win enough games for that 1 year. Like, I don't know how it would have gone for him if he had gotten to, like, year three at Houston and they only won, like, 7 games. Like, he sold high on that one. Nobody seems to like him. And it doesn't seem to be a particular to Austin thing. It doesn't sound like they liked him that much in Columbus. It doesn't – I mean, he's in Mensa. And that was my first sign that we had a problem here. Pablo did, because he went to Harvard. I was like, do you know anybody that's in Mensa? Because it sounds like people whose intelligence Mensa. Has been certified by somebody else doesn't get in. They still have Mensa, and Tom Herman is in it. And that's all I needed to know to let me know to watch out for this guy. And he really annoys me.
I'm just like, when does a coach have time to get into Mensa?
And like, do you think Tom Herman's just sitting around reading books? Because I don't.
No, and I
bet he's good at puzzles. Like, I bet he wrecks at the Sudoku, or however you say that.
He's just like, he's cleaning up the crossword in the morning. He's the guy who posts his times for the New York Times crossword on his Instagram. Yeah. Right? Like, 11:53, y'all, on a Thursday puzzle.
Oh, Mina yes. can smoke him. Come on.
I got to admit, I like yeah. Mina, I clip Mina most days. I got to start posting proof. Yeah. No, I'll go head to head.
Sir.
I know.
Wow.
That's a serious charge.
I'm a Monday through Wednesday crossword participant. I'm not looking for a challenge. I didn't need to do that yeah. fast.
I don't need that much anger in my life.
What is the easy day? Is there like a noted easy
Monday.
Day?
Monday,
okay.
Yeah.
And Monday. Then Thursday it's like Monday. Fuck you.
And then it just
Monday.
Runs
you can run through Monday and like Yeah. Yeah, but I find that the farther you go in the cross that I didn't bother to read in school because I looked up once and realized between like 6th and 11th grade I didn't do a single piece of sign reading and I'm missing out on the crossword puzzle as a result.
I was thinking though that like if somebody, you know, with Tom Herman, you know, if he's in Mensa and someone tells you you're in Mensa, right? This is the equivalent of somebody trying to pick up a woman at a bar and going like, I am very rich and I have lots of excellent sex. You should trust me. I have a card that says I am wealthy and I have lots of sex. Like, thanks, Tom. You don't have to tell people that. Also, maybe try beating Kansas State by more than a field goal. Maybe try winning 9 games.
I'd appreciate that.
Yeah, because that was a field goal. Like, that's in first year, Chris Kleeman's tenure. That's not, yeah, that's almost Charlie Strong territory. Yeah.
Where did Kansas State find their coach? Which Dakota?
They did get him from the hinterlands. I do have to say, though, as a program, Texas appreciates beating Kansas State a little more than others do. We long ago learned that this was no promised thing. As I recall, they lost to Ron Prince twice.
Wasn't Josh Freeman? Was Josh Freeman the greatest quarterback in the world for exactly 8 quarters against Texas?
Yeah, I think one of them was Josh Freeman because one year
did they lose to Colin Klein?
It's like the Jevin Seed game. And to be fair, probably. And to be fair, when Colin Klein was there, they were losing to every goddamn body. Like, name a Big 12 quarterback. I did that Austin, whatever kid at Iowa State, I feel like he probably beat Texas.
I don't remember
when he played. I think he did.
No, I think he did. Like, I that was the great joy of watching Big 12 football for me. I know people are like, oh, man, it's so dynamic watching Oklahoma score points. And I'm like, I really just used to crave watching somebody get old manned by going up to like Manhattan, Kansas and watching Kansas State run exactly 48 plays for 35 points and 40 minutes of possession.
Yes.
Hugh Freeze.
Have I ever told you my story that somebody told me about how in the middle of nowhere Manhattan is right fast? Because like it goes into our theme.
Yeah.
This guy says he goes to visit Manhattan, flies into Kansas City, gets off the plane, they get him in the car, starts riding, they get to Lawrence. He looks, oh, he's like, over here. They're like, nah, man, sit back. You got a long way to go. Ride down the road, probably another 30, 45 minutes later. They roll past, I think it's Topeka. He's like, over here. Told you, buddy, we got a long way to go. They go like another hour or something like that. They come past this other town. So we're here. I told you. Yep. Chill out, man. We got a long way to go. Get to the exit where it says Manhattan. Oh, no, dude. We got a long way to go. And I think it's another 20 minutes after that. That is what you're doing to recruit to get people to Kansas State. That's why they got to fly everybody in private. And why I don't understand why the rest of the Big Eight didn't have more of that fighting spirit of the Southwest Conference, where you can be good if you want to. It's just going to cost a little bit of money.
Who's never paid up, by the way? Like, who in that constellation's never paid up? At one point or another, right, like, Nebraska most likely had a good, solid benefits program. I would say benefits package for going to Lincoln. Yes.
They'll
right?
hide guns in safes.
They'll hide, Kevin Steele hid a gun in a safe, y'all. By the way, like,
really excited to watch him take over at Auburn.
Current Auburn defensive coordinator, Kevin Steele, never forget, put a gun in a safe. In 1995, yes. I want to say 94, 95. Yeah, so.
Story's still in Sports Look, Illustrated.
If you
yeah. probably.
Have the greatest college football team of all time, sometimes you got to put a gun in the safe. This is the trade to have the greatest college football team of all time.
That's what it says right outside the stadium.
They suspended Lawrence Phillips for a long time. Yes, yes, he does.
I think my favorite part of that Sports Illustrated story is that I think, if I'm remembering the framing correctly, they say Steele and Tom Osborne put the gun in the safe like it took two of them.
Yeah, yeah.
the gun.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they no. were carrying it like on Halloween.
No, that gun
or something?
Was going in the safe. Yeah, that gun was going in the safe. Tom Osborne does not seem like a trusting sort.
No, no, no. He was there to watch an account, right? He probably actually wrote it down, right? Gun in safe.
He's got like a ledger. Yes.
Yeah. He was the guy who was like, are you starting? Okay, well, what did you run in the 40 this week? Like, that was how Nebraska did it. They were like, they weren't like that feely, touchy, like, I don't know, they're both pretty even. He was like, no, Tommy Frazier ran like a 4.4. And Brooks Berringer ran a 4.5. So you start. That was how they did it. Like, they were not cozy or personal about anything. People are like, oh, the Heartlands team. No.
No.
No, they were ruthlessly analytical, right? On like not a level that we have now, but like they were cold about everything, right down to training. And I won't mention like their weight training program, which happened strictly on pure Midwestern values and
it's
white bread
training
and milk.
Because they pull train. We're back to trains in Nebraska again.
See, done yeah. and done. But who hasn't paid? Like who never actually ended up doing like. Because if I think of programs like old programs that never had a good moment of like absolute corruption, like Missouri never did that. Missouri's never had like any outlaw period. Mm-mm. Right?
Yeah. Is there like a Jack Mormon BYU booster population?
That's a fascinating question.
That's a really good question that we should ask Matt Brown.
Like the Pepsi Mafia?
Yeah.
Diet Pepsi, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One vice at a time, fellas.
Yeah. Be like Pepsi free, whatever the caffeine free version is, right?
Get you a milkshake after 10 p.m.
I want to know.
It's a nice
like,
life.
The recruiting story I want to know is I want to know the Marshawn Lynch era Cal story. When Cal finally decided to start like recruiting real players and they started going over in Oakland and they started recruiting California and they started taking like, you're like that's where you get really brilliant skill players like Marshawn Lynch, DeSean Jackson, right? They start looking under logs. I mean, like Aaron Rodgers was not an easy find, right? And he ends up at Cal. I want to know what boosters for Cal did that.
But see, I think Marshawn Lynch recruited himself basically by saying, "This is the closest thing to staying in Oakland I can get." Like, I'd love to know how much time Marshawn Lynch spent on the quad.
I think he probably walked through once a week. Like, look at this.
Oh yeah,
me.
Yeah, like he fall through.
Fantastic.
Like Marshawn Lynch never left home until they sent him to Buffalo, and oh my goodness, I can only imagine what that was.
Oof. Is that the saddest human on the planet?
Yes.
Like at that moment was when Marshawn like, Lynch landed in Buffalo.
We think about it being Marcus Mariota going from Hawaii to Oregon to Nashville, but that's way worse.
No, that's way worse.
Hold on. Yeah. No, Marshawn Lynch is not even the saddest former Pac-12 running back about the fact that he got sent to play in Buffalo. I don't know if we're allowed to mention this gentleman's name. He became rather infamous for non-football related things after a Hall of Fame career.
Oh,
but
no.
But that was a dude that really didn't want to be in no Buffalo.
I mean, man, he was in Buffalo in the 70s.
Yes.
Like, plants closed. 8 feet of snow. An offense that's going to run me 52 times a game directly into the teeth of some guy who's going to be dead in 10 years, right? Like, oh, no, that's grim.
Every day is a Bruce Springsteen song in Buffalo 1975.
Oh, man. Like, and just like, I don't remember, like, because, you know, I don't remember OJ playing in Buffalo. How many times do you think he went back?
Oh, only when NBC was set up for a broadcast.
It's great to be back in Buffalo
now.
Do you think he... Do you think he spent the night?
No.
Ever?
No. Yeah,
did OJ ever buy a house in Buffalo, or did he just stay at a hotel?
Doing the Dana.
Yeah, the Dana Holgorsen with the greatest commute ever. When Dana Holgorsen was at Oklahoma State, he did not live in Stillwater. He lived in Tulsa and commuted.
And how
like,
far is that?
It's not. It's like an hour 20 or something, right? Hour and a half. It's not.
He was sleeping in a truck.
I mean, hey, guys.
Know this.
Yeah, I just got to get
home.
His
voice has not always sounded that way.
I got to get home to Tulsa. Like, what are you doing when Tulsa's like the refuge? Right? It's almost easier to go to Oklahoma City than it is to go to Tulsa, which means that Dana just liked Tulsa. Oral Roberts University, they got culture.
You know, by
there.
The way, speaking of like scandal, I feel like it's been long enough ago since this happened that people may have forgotten that this man got ejected from multiple casinos in the state of West Virginia while being the head coach at the University of West Virginia. How hard is it to get kicked out of a West Virginia casino if you're the coach of the football team?
And it's Dana, so we were all just like, how droll.
Well, there's two things. Dana's, the story, one of the stories mentioned that Dana, it was one of Dana's friends, which makes me wonder, what was Dana Holgorsen's crew like in West Virginia when he went out to casinos?
Right.
Yeah. Which one of them was named Daryl?
I picture him having like a Charlie's Angels setup of like mid-50s divorcees.
Yeah. This here's Wanda.
Like he's got he's got backup dancers, but they all have lead pipes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And nothing is sadder than a rural casino. No. Like if it ain't on no boat.
No, it's grim. The second thing about that entire
I'm sure
situation,
that place did not have a luxury hotel attached to it. Mm-mm. Like, if your shit ain't got no quality hotel attached to it, this shit's about to be a bummer.
Dana, that makes me wonder, and I feel like I kind of have a clue as to why women frequent these casinos. How sad is it to be still being a person in the 20-teens searching for a place where you can smoke indoors? Because sometimes I feel like that's all he wants. I just want to eat my steak and smoke at the same time.
I just want to smoke inside where nothing can make the smoke go away. That's all I crave.
They won't even let me smoke at Waffle House anymore.
I know.
True story. This is why Andrew Sharp left LA and moved back to DC.
So he could smoke inside?
Yes.
Wow. That's amazing. You
hey,
know
Will Sharp.
Yeah.
Horrible trade.
Oh, the other thing that about that entire story is this, and this says a lot about West Virginia, that Holgorsen, that Bill Stewart leaked that. Like Bill Stewart found that out. Bill Stewart fed that.
Bitty.
Yeah, Bill Stewart fed that to a columnist, right? It ended up as a story and it backfired spectacularly on Stewart. And then he died.
Yes, he did.
Not funny. A man died.
No, it's terrible. It's just like, man, how wrong could it go for you? You get the West Virginia job after beating Oklahoma, right? Which never ever give anyone a head coaching job after they beat Oklahoma.
He got it on a tide of feelings.
Right. And two, he got it on a tide of feelings in a bar, right? With the power brokers that be in West Virginia. You're like, just give Bill the job.
God.
Yes. And by the way, if you're wondering, hey, guy, if you ever lost your previous job for using the N-word with your players, at what school might you be able to fully get back to the top? The answer just might be West Virginia.
Good God.
That did happen.
No, that completely
happened. That did happen.
Yep.
It never came up.
It's just like when schools lack self-awareness or have enough self-awareness to know that they're that school, like Kansas fired Mark Mangino. Right. For abuse allegations. Right. Like there were cases of players being forced to do, I don't know, some like extremely Cro-Magnon Viking kind of, you know, I do a bear crawl on hot AstroTurf for like 80 yards. Right. And They get fired. Like, they fire him because they're tired of him. The arrogance that Kansas had to go, you know what? I think we can keep this going. Like, despite the entire history of Kansas, like, football, all the way back. The only sport Kansas has ever been consistently good at is the one where you really need five players, right? Five players and some backups, right? That's the only sport. Yes. If you need 22 athletes at a minimum, it ain't your game. Get out of the state, right? You're going to have to do what Kansas State did, and you're going to have to shop for odd parts and sausage casings, right? You're going to have to get that. You're going to have to get that tight. Right. You're going to have to, like, JUCO it to hell and get a tight end who can, like, throw the ball 30 yards. Accurately? No. But we're going to get him there, right? That's the only way you can be good at Kansas. And Kansas, with Mark Mangino, the guy who got them to the Orange Bowl, right? The guy who got them to 11 wins. Yeah. Yeah. And they won with, like, a 5'8" quarterback, right? And Aqib Talib. That's it. Which, by the way, if you want to know, there's a phenomenon that happens in college football all the time where there is a white player who is given the lion's share of media attention. Like, this guy is the heart of the team, okay? We'll call it the Tebow phenomenon, right? Where they're like, this guy's a leader. He anchors the whole thing. And the people who are actually making things happen and, like, keeping the locker room in line and establishing a culture are like on the Tebow team, it was Spikes, it was Harvin, right? It was the Pouncies, but they're like, oh, that Tebow, everyone follows his lead. He's not the guy that they're afraid of, right? He's not the guy who's, like, actually calling people out in practice and not getting, like, eye rolls, right? No. Todd Reesing, great player, right? Do you want to know who really gave that Kansas team attitude? Aqib Talib, right? That's, like, never gets enough credit. Won't ever give enough credit.
He is, I mean, also, what must have been in his dossier that he wound up having to go to Kansas?
Yeah.
I don't think it was good. I don't think it was, like, flattering.
Pac-Man Jones had to go from Atlanta to West Virginia. Tell me why.
My favorite thing about Rich Rodriguez's players, right? Or anybody really, if you see, like, skill players who end up at, like, West Virginia, right? Or end up at Kansas, you can pretty much see the story. You go, Pat White, he's undersized, right? Like, he's not a big dude at all, right? You know, but he wanted to play quarterback, so, and he's really fast, so we got him. Noel Devine, okay, you know, had some academic problems, and you know, he's kind of undersized, but, you know, obviously brilliant, we got him. And then you see, like, Pac-Man Jones, you go, oh man, that's a brilliant cornerback. No obvious physical sort of, you know, disadvantages or oddities. What's up with him? You're like, I don't know. He'll tell a coach to suck his dick in 2 seconds if he doesn't like what he's hearing. All right. Yeah. Okay. Cool. That's probably
why he produced in Atlanta. Like, I think he, like, ran for, like, 1,800 yards on offense, and he was a 2-star recruit who got an offer from Duke because he had good grades.
Yeah. No, it wasn't even the grades. That's the funniest part about Pac-Man. Like, even to this day, Pac-Man still has all of his money.
Yep.
Right? Pac-Man's got the nice spot. Pac-Man keeps everything in line. Pac-Man is a really smart dude, right? It's just, at some point in the encounter with authority, the attitude that he had was, I also have opinions about what should be happening right now.
He's a cat. Is he a cat?
Yeah, Pac-Man Jones might be a cat, right? Like, no. Yeah, get off the chair.
Counterpoint.
I disagree.
No.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. I would prefer not to.
Like, I love, like, the Cool Hand Luke aspect to players like that, right? Like, hey, you're brilliant. What are you going to do? You're going to have to put me in solitary because I'm going to eat all these eggs. That's what I'm going to do. I'm Pac-Man Jones, and I'm going to eat all of these eggs in one sitting. I love players like that.
By the way, Aqib Talib from Richardson, Texas. His other offers coming out of high school were Arizona, Baylor, Tulsa, Wyoming, and Kansas State.
Kansas State.
Oh, excuse me. No offer from Kansas State. So not good enough for Kansas State. Good enough for Wyoming, though.
No, Kansas State wanted him to go to JUCO to get some refinement.
I would
like,
assume JUCO, so.
Like, finishing school for Kansas State.
Yeah.
And just Bill Snyder's finishing school. Like, they all come out with ascots, right? Going, yes. Like, Byron Keats or Shelley, sir. Yes. I am now a man of style and taste, and I will take my fortune and wares to Manhattan, the Big Apple.
Yo, thinking about scandal, Northwestern. Has Northwestern ever paid?
Oh, no. No, no, no. They never.
No. Because if they had, they wouldn't shut up about it.
Yeah, they would have to report it themselves.
I take that back. Because I think, based on what Colorado was like with Gary Barnett and the kind of like low scale stuff that I think they had to do to get recruits, I'm going to go ahead and just say that there may have been a little bit of that.
He did get to the fucking Rose Bowl.
Then what happened?
Yeah.
Okay.
There was the point shaving scandal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was that.
So that's roundabout payment.
That anymore.
That's like,
can we
that's
bring
like,
back point shaving?
That's like self payment, right?
Yeah. By the way, like you couldn't point shave this year at Northwestern. They don't have points no. to shave.
On the contrary, maybe that's the problem.
Maybe.
Although shaving is the greatest evidence that nobody's getting paid.
Yeah.
Which that's just how Patty Fitz likes it.
Yeah. I think that's the thing when people say, oh man, it's rampant. People are being paid all of this money. Okay. Compared with college basketball, you only have this many players who can do what you're asking them to do, right? There's only so many people who are like 6'8", 6'9", and can play basketball and move, right? There's just way more of an opportunity to take this much money and apply it to this many players, right? Football, labor, like there are, in extraordinary cases, you get people who might be worth six figures, right, to a team. In extraordinary cases. I don't know. I'm just going to pull a number at random. 180 grand.
Interesting.
Right? Just adjusted market values around like, I don't know, 2009?
That's a good
2010?
Segue. Yeah. That's a good segue.
Just pulling one out of the air there. Right?
Speaking of people who never paid.
It is an ongoing investigation.
I tell you this though, let them start paying players and that competition for those walk-on spots going to get powerful.
It'll be every place will be Nebraska 1995.
Yeah, that shit's a reality show. Once you do that.
Oh, God. What school's going to do that? The reality show to make it? It won't be Alabama because that would involve too much media access.
The answer is obviously Texas A&M. Mm.
That's yeah. Do you want to be an Aggie?
Do you want to be on that 12-man squad? I guess they don't do that no more, but you know.
Got to come to regular church with us, and then you got to come to dog church.
Dog church. Then you got to come to after church. Then you got to listen to all the Eric church, and then
you come to midnight church, and we'll see.
Then midnight church.
Yo, I just want to note that we normally only pay all this reference to a school's traditions when they've won something.
Yeah.
Thank you. It is weird when you
A&M fans. You can reach Bo at StephenGodfrey@bannersociety.com.
You know who doesn't really...
He's taking all of our comments for Bo. You can just send them all right there.
I think it's when they get to the fourth thing, right? Like, if you have one tradition, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And you're walking around, they're like, oh, well, that's another one. And you go, ah, that's interesting. You have two. And then they're third, and you can go, oh, what rich lore, right? Like, wow, such deep culture on this campus. When they get to the fourth one, you're like, that's too much to remember. This is a cult.
They lose me as soon as it's a large group of male college students with the ability to show up in pressed pants.
That's not right.
At a moment's notice. It's not natural.
No. Like, go look at Tennessee. There's a lot of really unironed khakis out there.
Rude.
Those are my people. I'm speaking hurtful. From experience.
I need you guys to understand something. I graduated from Waller High School in Waller, Texas. Our school colors are maroon and white. A song was the Aggie War Hymn. Like, I am very much so steeped in the ways of Aggie. And, oh, my God, I could not imagine, like, going there for college. Like, I don't think that people understand, given who plays football, trying to get people to go there. Like, y'all think that weird stuff is cute. Not everybody responds to it the same way, right? Like, it's not like when you hear, like, Southern's band or something like that. Not you in particular, the general you. Hear Southern's band and are like, oh, wow, this new cultural world I would love to, like, indulge in, even if just a little bit. That ain't the response that people have to this Texas A&M stuff when they not of it. That's not how it works.
So you're saying ROTC, the university, doesn't appeal to broad swaths of young
I feel
athletes?
Like the ROTC has to be offended. Is that, like, that ROTC is actually something.
Yeah, they're like, we're actually, like, putting something forward. the rest of you are like fake soldiers.
So right? When you have a high school like based off the, like, you know, the, lots and lots of high schools use like college or pro logos. But when you use A&M's, do you have to have like your own dog, your own?
You know, oh, no, there's only one dog.
Didn't have a dog. I'm a little surprised in retrospect because it seemed like it would be the next level of it. In fact, who knows? An alum may be listening now and they'll try to find a way to bring a dog.
You probably can't do midnight yell for the high school Aggies because of curfew, you know, so you got to do like 9:30 yell.
I had a high school teacher who he was in the Corps. And so like every year at high school graduation, he would dress up in his Corps suit. You know, like it was a big thing to him. He's a really good dude, though. Like, but he did this stuff. Like that was his thing. And he said that the beat that you wanted or whatever you called it in the Corps was that you wanted the dog. You're just walking around campus with a dog and in a uniform, that it was just like cash money. And I'm still thinking to myself, though, but you got to be in this to do that. Like, you can get your own dog.
I mean, you could just go to the shelter. You don't have to do all that other stuff.
Dog ain't even got to be cute. Just got to be a dog.
I was... the A&M coming to the SEC like made a lot of sense to me, just because of the sort of, I guess... they seem to be like the long lost extreme cult variation of what most fan bases in the SEC do anyway.
Yes.
Right. But the one thing that has been the unexpected benefit of having them back is that they get the rivalry with LSU back, which I can't really explain how antithetical one place is to the other in terms of like, they're both real devoted and they both have football teams. And they're both pretty close to the Gulf of Mexico, relatively speaking. That's it. And they both have, they love trucks. That's everything else is off board, right?
I agree. And I have my biggest reason for wanting them there is this will rev up the Texas A&M cheating machine again. Yes. Like, if they really want
Let's
to
get creative.
Achieve where their ambitions lie, they're going to have to crank this up a little bit, man. They gonna have to take it to where it's been.
There is the team that Bud Elliott has pointed this out. The people who lost out most with the addition of A&M were the Arkansas Razorbacks.
Yes.
That like Arkansas might never be good again. Like they might never have a consistent 8 to 10 win stretch without some serious restructuring, because since A&M has joined, Arkansas hasn't gotten anything. Like, whatever tranche they occupied in terms of recruiting or presence or resources, A&M is completely eaten up.
Let's get PAPN for a minute. Should they go triple?
Ooh.
Should they get real weird?
I mean, I think they should go the other way, right? Like, I think they should hire Kevin Kelly. I think they should just onside, no punting, just be the future of football if you're not going to be able to be good at anything else, right? The other alternative would be going back.
Yeah.
Look, and just, man, be the Cro-Magnon
going
program.
Back to the Southwest Conference.
That's what I'm saying. They, Arkansas and A&M both need to humble themselves and just come on back to the Big 12. Everybody would be in better shape if both Arkansas has a chance at success in the Big 12. They have no chance of success in the SEC. None whatsoever.
And they make so much more sense in the Big 12.
You heard it from Bo. He wants the Aggies back.
But I mean, he misses them.
Bo wants to see the Aggies again.
It's not a rivalry, but they think about it a lot.
I'm content to never play them again.
Well, why should you? You're not rivals.
I'm down to be rivals, and this is how you do it. Never play them again.
I mean,
preserving that rivalry in amber.
The last one went. The last one just went fine. It was just fine.
Yes, that's the thing. To let them go into perpetuity with a home 27-25 loss to Case McCoy. Case. Never play him again.
Can I tell you the worst thing I've ever seen on a football field? The worst thing I've ever seen on a football field was Junior Rose Green hitting Reggie Brown in the head. That was the worst damn thing I've ever seen on a football field. You know what the second worst thing I've ever seen was? Case McCoy scrambling.
Yes. Oh, God.
It's the only time I've ever stood up in the stands and yelled, "Get down." Was watching, like, I did. I was just, it was panicking.
It's like watching a haunted doll run.
It was like watching, you know, like In The Sorcerer's Apprentice, when they animate a hat rack and the hat rack is like,
yes,
like, yeah, that's exactly how Case McCoy scrambled.
Like, those are not human limbs.
There was so much contact area. That yeah. was what terrified me, because all of this was rigid. Like, only his knees moved, and the rest of him was completely still, just a big target.
Like, he ran like a very upright Forrest Gump.
It was horrible. It was just the worst thing I've ever seen.
And he did it on the way to a Texas A&M, to send Texas A&M. That's what I'm saying. They just got to get that machine back humming, right? Where are the Trans Ams? Get the Trans Ams off the line and into these parking lots.
I think there would be a Dodge rental car lot now.
Just, fair.
Yeah.
Again, just pulling a random one. No program surely does this, but a rental car lot that gave parents, relatives, chargers, put them in their name, and then their kids drove them, right? No program would do that, I'm saying. No really successful program would do that. It would be a desperate program that would only do that with chargers, challengers, out of a rental car fleet in Texas.
Dodge is a moderately priced vehicle.
Hey, listen, Atlanta runs on them, man. Do you know, like, every third car here is a Charger or a Challenger?
Hey, man, I had a Challenger as a rental in L.A. over the weekend, and that thing goes.
Yeah, I mean, I've driven the 808 horsepower version of that, so. Yeah. It's, yeah, I drove it to the Masters. That was fun to pull up with like, you know, daddy fishing shirt and his, like, you know, Masters cap getting out of his Mercedes. And I pulled up next to that and let the valet drive it. I let a 17-year-old valet drive an 808 horsepower car. I'm not very smart.
No, you're terrific.
You're a cool dad, kind
of. Cool dad. No, just negligent dad. Yeah. Negligent dad and cool dad are right next to each other.
Yeah,
right?
Like that's the stepdad you like too much. Right?
He'll like stepdad who has
no kids of his own and just stumbled into this. It's like, yeah, fuck it. Why not?
I want to go live at Randy's house. No.
Yeah. Do you want to keep a pet raccoon in the house? I'm good with it. Let's do it.
If it's in the house, it's a pet.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it works.
It's fine. If you wanted to keep an alligator in the bathtub, Uncle Randy'd be fine with that. With A&M, does Jimbo have like the Jackie Sherrill like killer instinct in terms of being nasty enough?
That's a good question, because the thing about Jackie Sherrill, another one of these guys that was two things at once. One, a bit ahead of the integration curve, and two, a bit ahead of the crookedness curve, because just win, baby. That is why, right?
I like any coach whose record looks like the CIA went through and redacted certain seasons.
Yes.
That's when you know they're doing good work, right? You're like, oh, man, it looks like they didn't even play that year, but there's an 11-0 record on the side. Yeah.
The man had a bull castrated out of practice. And by the way, they won that game.
Yeah.
People forget that part.
No, you know, like the greatest collision of coaching personalities that I can remember seeing, like in my pre-professional career, was watching Jackie Sherrill and Steve Spurrier coach up against each other, because one year Jackie Sherrill with a very Jackie Sherrill-ish team, they passed like 8 times with Wayne Madkin, and they just beat the hide off of Spurrier, right? Just. In Starkville, it was awful. There's cowbells. The thing's open, right? You can see like people are just sitting there on the grass outside the fence watching the game, right? It just dying, right? Like just forcing Steve Spurrier and the Gators to make all kinds of unforced errors. Then the next year, that's when somebody threw a cowbell out of the stands and knocked out a trainer in Starkville. The following year, as revenge, when they were up, I believe, by 40, Spurrier called a deep ball with the backup to score and make it 50, and pointed at the guy who'd been knocked out and was like, that was for you. And like, I could have watched them do that back and forth forever, because they clearly, absolutely, they did not want to win, right? Spurrier was convinced Sherrill was crooked, right? And was one of these like prehistoric run first kind of offenses. And on the other side, you know, like, I'm sure Sherrill was like, you pass the ball. You complain about me cheating, I'm going to beat you by 30. Could have watched that all day.
Can you imagine how mortified Spurrier was by that loss?
Oh, no. I think he's still been about it.
Yes.
Yeah, that was where he accidentally took an intentional safety. Like he told Grossman to take a safety, and then immediately on the sideline, you saw him go, "Ow, dang it!" Like he got it wrong when you were supposed to do that. And after the game, they're like, "So, coach, what was the thinking behind that call?" And he's like, "I screwed it up. I just screwed that call up." And like Cheryl's recruiting pitch, polar opposite. Cheryl's like, "Hey, you come here. I'm gonna make it worth your while. Come Starkville. We're gonna make some things work for you. We're gonna make it happen." Spurrier, per everyone who's ever recruited him, was a terrible recruiter. He's just like, "Hey, y'all, why don't you come on down and play some football?
You can retire early."
Yeah, that was a
James. Most people work their whole lives to get down to Florida. James
Fates will say, like, his big pitch was, "You could be 65 right now." He's like, "Most people work their whole lives to come down to Florida. You can come down right now." It's like, that was the big pitch was, "You could be an old man."
I like it. Why don't you?
Yeah. And I think most people, like, his pitch was, I think most recruits were like, "Hey, he's so bad at this. He must be really good at the other thing. So, yeah, I'll come."
I kind of wish Spurrier was crooked. Like, imagine that was more fun it would be if he was crooked.
Oh, no, I think that was his restrictor plate. Otherwise, he would have been, like, you know, unstoppable. He would have been the coolest coach in the history of college football. Instead, he was like, "I got to be honest. Otherwise, I'm too powerful."
How benevolent.
You know, because like, think about who he was recruiting against at the time. He was recruiting against, like,
don't do it.
Yeah, Fulmer.
All right.
Right? Who he wrote a letter to Fulmer, like, every other year that was like, "I heard something. And if it's true, you let me know. And if it's not, quit talking about me. Bye." Like, just send him a letter, like, "Tell me you're cheating."
That's tell you a Don Days, like, too. His Spurrier mm-hmm. story. He was covering, I think it was the 95 Fiesta Bowl. And this is when Spurrier's name was in the mix for the Bucks. I think the time Tony Dungy got the job.
Yeah.
He's like, "Yeah, well, you know, I don't know what it is, but, you know, some coaches, when these jobs come open, people just assume that, you know, you're going to be interested in those jobs. And I guess I'm one of those." And then there's this pause and out of nowhere. Now, why is it that Phil Fulmer's name never comes up in any situations? Why did you do that? Why did you say that? He's not even here.
I hear about everyone else's husband cheating on him. Why aren't you? Doesn't anybody want to have sex with you, Tom? Doesn't anybody? Why don't I ever hear your name thrown out when we're talking about who's running around? Yeah, I don't.
Fortunately, Phil Fulmer no longer has any control over the Tennessee football program, so I got nothing to worry about.
Just go away, man.
I'm going to walk into the sea.
I think that's like another super college football thing is this, that you might think a place is small and that the amount of power granted you by occupying said position would be not worth, you know, fighting or scheming or plotting over, you know. Au contraire. There are people who hang on to the Troy job, right? Like, they had to push Larry Blatney's ass out of Troy, Alabama, because he's like, "No, my kingdom."
Yeah, they got a Publix now.
Yeah, see?
What? Sir.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Hey, what is Troy close to? Because I don't even know.
Auburn.
Yeah.
Oh, got it.
The greater Columbus metro area.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
It's
okay.
It's like the Auburn Remora
kind of. Yeah, it's like Shadow Auburn.
So yeah, I have an uncle who's from Opelika. No, he's not from Opelika. But he married two separate women on separate occasions from Opelika and somehow never mentioned to the second that he was once married to another woman from Opelika and thought that he could keep that a secret.
How long did that last?
I don't even know if it made it to the altar, to be honest, upon the realization. Because somebody asked the woman where she's from, and she said Opelika. So somebody reasonably was like, "Whoa, hot damn, two women from Opelika." Right, because why would you think that never came up?
Was there a directory?
Right, like, this was never going to last. At least as a story.
Now, is he from somewhere tiny where he thinks, Opelika, that's a big town. They probably never met.
Actually, there might be something to that.
The big bustle of Opelika.
Now, my brother went to Auburn. And
nobody's perfect.
Yeah, I know.
Everybody. It happens in the best of families.
And he said, "Okay, I went to visit him," and he goes, "Okay, so when you're coming in," this is the first time I'd been there. He goes, "What you need to do is you need to go right when you come off the interstate, because if you go left, you're going to go out to Locopocha, and you don't want to do that." And I was like, well, what am I going to see? And he's like, you still want to go out to Loco Poche. And I was like, okay, cool. So naturally, I turned left instead of turning right. And I went out to Loco Poche.
You big dummy.
And when I went out to Loco Poche, he said, I saw like a house with like a couple of houses with no doors on them. Not doors open. No doors. And people riding ATVs in their front yard where there weren't ATV ramps, but like there were ramps, right? Like doing stunts on ATVs in their front yard. And I was like, yeah, that's not real. And I drove back into Auburn and I was like, I saw houses with no doors on them and people riding ATVs like over deflated kiddie pools in their front yard. And he goes, no, that's right. I know those people. I was like, that's Auburn still.
I did a talk there and like,
how'd that go?
Well, it was 2012, the year they went winless in the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to make a small joke about the football program. not even a little, guys. Mm-mm. They don't have a sense of humor about those things.
They are the University of Big Feelings.
Well, that was...
Yeah, they could not find the humor in that season. Not even a little bit.
I don't know if I would find the humor in going completely, like, going winless
two seasons. Try it sometime. I recommend it.
Two seasons after?
It's very freeing.
Two full seasons after getting a national title?
Oh, yeah, that'd be different.
Yeah, that's a little different. Yeah. Like, it's different to be skidding along the ground, right? Like we're bad, we're real bad. Mm. Like, that can happen. And some programs can hit that faster, like UCF. Like, UCF went from, like, 0-11 to undefeated in, like, 3 years, right? Now, at Auburn, that can happen in the SEC, right? Like, Auburn is the weirdest. I mean, I just wrote about that, but, like, Auburn is the weirdest program for variance and for expecting anything consistent out of them.
Yeah, I greatly enjoyed the piece on Auburn burning everything down for themselves and others. What a strange existence to have.
Yeah, the program that falls asleep with a cigarette on the couch every year.
Thank you, Joe.
And they love to cheat.
The thing that I resent about Auburn that they're coming out of, but the thing that I will always carry against them from the Cam thing, it's not that they didn't get caught. It's that they were, we would never. Like, I'm gonna venture out on a really sturdy looking limb here, and I'm going to say that if the Cam Newton thing had gone down at Bama would have gloried in it, and we would have had a lot more fun. As a result, Auburn people insisting that Cam wanted to come to Auburn just because it was Auburn is why I don't like Auburn people.
See, I don't know, because like Cam would have had an entirely different coaching thing, right?
Just let me make this about the money.
Okay, we can make that about the money.
Like, Bama fans would have trumpeted this, right?
Yeah, I guess some of us are working harder to recruit than others.
Yeah. Yeah. And Auburn's like, well, you know, it's just that this is a real family. And I'm like, yeah, I asked my family for money too.
It's a matter of
y'all aren't having enough fun with this. I insist to this day that Auburn did not have enough fun with this.
I do have to say, though, I had a great Cam Newton source during that time, and he really did like Auburn. I think that, like, he himself chose Auburn, and then Auburn had to handle step number two. Like, him liking it was the necessary condition, but the sufficient one. Now that's a little different.
Okay, now how much did Cecil like it?
How much?
How much did Cecil like it?
Wow, he broke up on me. That stinks.
No, can you? Right, yeah, how much did?
Right when y'all are asking about, it sounded like redacted amounts. That's when the audio skips
interesting.
Out.
Interesting, and the it full did. Cat's just going nuts down
that
here.
It did. It's amazing how we brought up Cecil Newton's name and our audio started failing. Yeah, don't mess with Cecil. Don't mess with Cecil. He'll get you out of that Howard job too.
Auburn fans, let me love you. Have more fun with your cheating. That's all I'm saying.
I agree there.
The entire like Bama LSU dynamic switched after LSU and Jason's son, Joe Burrow, beat them in Tuscaloosa, which is my favorite thing because God, I love to see that place like more quiet. Love to see that place sad. You just get so many excellent crowd shots of like defeated looking people who look like they were in a Walker Evans photo spread, right?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a deep pull.
It's a deep pull, but I'm going to praise famous men. And by that, I mean Ed Ogeron. Because I've been thinking about this all week and trying to figure it out, but like, is Ed Orgeron the funniest coach to beat Nick Saban? Like, is that the
it's up there.
Is that the fun? Because I mean, Hugh Freeze doing it twice is still the funniest. Still the right.
Hold on, Les Miles pulled off a back to back with Jordan Jefferson.
I mean, I don't know. I'm gonna go Hugh Freeze with Chad Kelly and Bo Wallace.
Yeah, I mean,
that's funnier in a different way.
I just want to imagine were there those post game handshakes between Saban and the opposing quarterbacks that sometimes happen on the on field? Like, imagine Saban shaking Chad Kelly's hand, and Chad Kelly like pulls him in for a hug and then just makes a fart noise in his ear. It's like, actually, I hate this.
I hate everything happening right now. Everything. The other one is. I mean, Spurrier beating Saban isn't as funny, but like the quarterback he did it with was Steven Garcia.
That's my favorite one forever. For that reason, Saban got beat by a guy who buys swords at the mall.
Well, I mean, it's a different coach, but let us never forget that crazy 2010 LSU win over Florida that had Urban Meyer just unable to even answer questions about Les Miles' strategy in the post game. That was the day it ended.
When Meyer after losses really would just get paralytic, right? Like he could not, he just lost, he just shut down. He could not speak. He could not articulate anything. No,
it gave him like an electrical seizure, right?
Yeah. He sounded like somebody whose audio was cutting out, right? Like in his brain. And then when he had to face Les Miles, somebody who I'm sure was sleeping approximately 30 hours more than him a week, every single week, probably, you know, like probably taking an afternoon off to just go hang out with the kids, you know, and then rolls in and is like, yeah, I figured we'd call a couple of fake field goals and run like off tackle. Wow. That's all we needed.
Let's also recall 2007 Nick Saban lost to Sylvester Croom, Tommy Tuberville, and Charlie Weatherby, who currently works for a church in Orlando.
Oh, is that the coach that was at Louisiana Monroe?
Yeah. Coach of the Warhawks.
They put up a billboard for that game.
They did.
Which, yeah, that's I terrific. Love that. Like, beat Bama, and then I'm out. That's it. Lord's calling. I've done top. My work here.
And didn't he lose to UAB when he was at LSU?
Correct.
He did.
I believe he lost to the immortal Darrell Hackney. My favorite quarterback. Darrell Hackney was like about, I think he was like 5'10 height-wise, and he was about 5'8 width-wise. Like, he looked like a space invader. Like, he was just all blocks and pixels. He was huge. But yeah, he lost to UAB when he was at LSU. And remember, I believe... let's see, did they lose? They lost to Iowa, did they not? In Nick Saban's last game at LSU? Yes,
they did.
Yeah. Shame of shame.
Capital One Bowl.
Yeah. That wasn't even Drew Brees, Iowa. Was that Drew Tate?
Was
that Drew Tate?
Was it the Brad Banks guy?
I don't think it was Brad Banks. I think that was a Drew Tate Hail Mary.
I forgot about Drew Tate.
Because that was the symmetry, is that they had Hail Mary'd Kentucky, right? Then the Bluegrass Miracle. And then they got the same thing done to them in the game, which is 10 times funnier because, I don't know, like Nick Saban winning by a Hail Mary, he's just mad about it, right? He's just infuriated that it came down to that.
He's infuriated that he had to sweat for it.
Yeah. He's infuriated that like something unplanned caused victory.
Entitled millennial Nick Saban.
Right. He's like, ah, something random and good happened. That's the worst thing that could happen to me as a coach. And then something random and bad happened to him. And he's like, well, look at that. Could have prevented that.
We should also recall Nick Saban is currently on an 0-3 streak against Purdue. Due to his time at Michigan State. I think he's scared to get that one right.
And keep in mind, that would only be freshman and sophomore Drew Brees.
Ooh.
We had a junior. Looks like we had a junior in there, but still, yeah.
That's why Bama's ducking.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Jason,
you're right.
What'd you say about Nebraska? Even the moon only let Purdue only walk over it the one time. Why does this keep happening? Why do I just revert to Spurrier voice every time I'm taunting?
Yeah, that's the other one that I know it's happened twice now, and we're kind of used to it. But if I told you in 2011 that Dabo Swinney was going to beat Nick Saban twice in high stakes situations,
not a fucking clue.
Yeah, you'd have had me committed.
Most improbable shit in the world. Like this Ogeron shit is pretty crazy in and of itself. But people forget early Dabo looked like a disaster.
I mean, early Dabo let West Virginia put up 70 in a bowl game.
I was there. It was beautiful. Yes. That was a great game.
I mean, Dabo. Dabo's been
posted off that shit for like 9 years.
I mean, so have I emotionally.
I mean, Dabo, if you'll remember, like Dabo takes so long to get over the hump. Like Taj Boyd lines up, what was this 2014? I believe 2013. They line up at FSU and it's supposed to be an actual game. And Florida State's up like, I think 31-0 at the half or 31-7. And they end up winning. Yeah, they end up winning. And this is in Clemson, right? Like, oh, yeah, man, Taj Boyd, they're going to handle. They got this, right? It's going to be good. And Jameis Winston just comes out and shreds them.
It was a destruction.
Yeah. Also, by the way, I'm pretty sure Clemson loses that the next year, right? I think it's a much tighter game, but they lose that the next year, like 24-20 or something. Like
remember the next year was when Jameis was suspended for, acting a fool in the cafeteria. And so the quarterback was like Sean McGuire or something, and they still beat Clemson.
Yeah, still beat a good Clemson team, like a really good Clemson team, a team that like they probably really should have walked through that game easy against Florida State.
And by the way, that tells you just how mad they were at Jameis at that point, that they sat him for that game.
This is, by the way, of course, A&M fans, if you're listening to this, this isn't how it's going to go at A&M. No.
No, this is different.
This is different.
Also, no. He's got your money no matter what.
Hey, man, they like if the price of crude is right, then they're not worried about the money. But if something happens to that price of crude, boy, it's going to get tight on Jim Bubba.
This is how A&M ends up playing a game in, like, Doha. They end up playing a game in Dubai.
What's the Qatari Bowl?
The Qatari Bowl? I don't know. The Qatari Bowl, Texas A&M is definitely one of those teams, right?
They're going to end up playing on an indoor ski resort.
Yeah, traditional A&M football in an indoor ski resort in Dubai.
A&M versus SMU in Jeddah.
Okay.
I'm listening. Sonny Dykes in, like, the robes. Oh, yeah. Feeling this.